Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
That's why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
You get our son!
Happy birthday, Polly.
Kevin, still chilly?
Lights, camera, Barstool starts freaking out.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 170. Nope, 68. That was close. It's off by two or three. Episode 168, it's the Spider-Man Far From Home episode. Jeff Lowe, Trill Ballins, Ken Jack. That's right. Marvel's back. And we're reviewing Spider-Man Far From Home. We're very excited to talk about that, talk about spoilers on that, because we've not had a chance to do that. We've kind of had to skate around the topic a bit. Got some other stuff for you, including a top five worst comic book movie villains rankings. This was an easy list. I had a very easy time, but mine, very different from the audience. We have one crossover between me and the audience. I'm curious what you guys have. What's going on other than that?
Tacos are at Burger King now.
They look.
Have you seen this?
They look better than the Jack in the Box ones.
They do.
They look the same to me.
No, it doesn't have that. That slice of American cheese in the Jack in the Box one is so unappealing.
Like that, just nice Indiana fondue on it. Okay,
Indiana fondue.
What's that? What's that French word for that cheese that's like hot and then just kind of like slopped off onto something?
Fondue.
No, it's like croquette or something like that.
Like the game you play on the horses?
Yeah, it's like croquet. It's polo.
Croquet.
No, it's like a cheese. It's like a French thing or maybe a French Canadian thing. And they make the top of a block of cheese really hot and they take a big knife and slop it off onto something.
Yeah, I've seen the videos.
Yeah, croquettes, I believe, are fried. They're like, it's something, it's like a fried delicacy.
I'm not saying that's the word. I'm not saying that's the word, guys. I feel like you guys let's press the reset button. Tacos are Burger King, and I want one.
I believe it's a raclette. A raclette?
Yes. Okay. I knew. Yes, that's it.
Oh, I've seen some of her videos.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, they do have tacos. I have not tried them. I would like to try them because I respect Burger King and we're big. I mean, this is not an ad. They're not our sponsor.
Not right now.
I like Burger King a lot.
Please sponsor us.
We are heard Barstool stuff before.
I know, but us. I'm begging you.
There is something that we are going to run into down the line, I believe, related to sponsorship, which is going to be interesting. I'm not going to say anything, though. Yep. That's all I'm going to say. However, Burger King, we fucking love. I mean, I'm a major Burger King defender.
Same.
So I'll give them a try. And you know what? An employee could serve me a fake taco of slop, and I would still say it's better than Jack in the Box tacos.
So if we want Burger King, we're probably going to have to go to the Herald Square one, where it's like in a basement. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, then there's one in Times Square, which it's a suffocating nightmare.
Anywhere in Midtown is, but the one in the basement rules. I got a rodeo burger there when I think it's after we did a fast food ranking, and I did it just for a picture, and it was miserable.
Do you think any Burger Kings have short angry short men yelling screaming in their restaurants.
So the funniest thing about that bagel guy, and I was talking to you about it earlier, Jeff, so that's in my hometown. Like, that's a bagel place that's like a mile away from my house that I used to go to nonstop. And that everyone there is like so nice. Like, that's like one of like the things that's like they're known for is like the bagel guys there. It's like a community thing, and everyone there is really, really nice. So there's nothing in the world I can imagine setting that guy off other than him reading shit on the internet that makes him mad.
Like, what's the craziest thing you guys have happened in a retail situation?
I mean, nothing as crazy as that.
No, nothing really has anything close to that.
I saw a fight in a mall food court a long time ago.
I always get behind somebody paying with a check, and that's usually the worst thing to happen to me.
Well, as someone who worked in retail for like 5 years, paying by check, go fuck yourself.
Big time.
Unless there's other certain situations, it holds the line up, and rightfully so. The people behind the person paying with check, they usually get mad at the person behind the counter, because no matter how hard it is, or no matter how like hard you try to make it go quickly as a person ringing the check up, it looks like you're doing a really slow job with it, and it makes you look bad. So
it's always hard too, because you have to like frank the check or whatever and like do that validation bullshit. Remember when I used to work at a supermarket when I was like 15 or whatever, that shit always confused me and I hated it. And anyone that paid by check was usually olds. Fuck you. Just bottom line.
That's true. Typically olds.
Just learn how to use Venmo. Take a learning annex at Michigan State, since you can go there for free now or whatever.
Classically, from check to Venmo.
Yeah.
I remember being at a supermarket and running in and grabbing some things from my parents when I was like 15. Still very awkward. And, you know, when you're 15, somebody who's like 17 seems like they're, you know, just 18 years older than you. So they're just like cool looking dude, 17-year-old working the counter, and I come up with like a lime and a box of salt or something like that. And he looks at me and he's like, wow, you're really having a great night, aren't you? And I had nothing to say to him.
Your parents didn't trust you with the card?
Pay with cash. I forget what supermarket it was, but I don't forget what he said to me. He was very condescending, but I didn't have a comeback. I got roasted really hard and it stuck with me. Like, everybody has those roasts where they just get completely torn apart when they're like 15 and it sticks with them, and they spend the next 20 years of their life thinking of the perfect comeback.
Shit. I'm trying to think of mine. Someone in like middle school once said that I was the most in shape fat person of all time. And I didn't know what that meant, but it really hurt my feelings at the time.
That's a bad roast, because that's like you're fat despite like trying to not be fat, right?
Yeah, I guess that's what they were going for. And like, I tried digesting it and I was just like, I know he's calling me fat. Like, I know this is an insult, but also I don't know what the beginning part of the roast means. So it hurt. It hurt bad.
The one time I got really yelled at, I had a guy, because I worked in a golf store. He came up to the counter with something, that like he needed the other part of it. He was on the other end of the store, and the guy in front of him wanted a water. And I'm like, all right, this guy's going to walk back and get the other part, and I'll ring this guy up with the water. And that guy fucking sprinted to the back of the store. And he was like a dead sprint, came back sweating. And he came back just for me to have the receipt print for the guy who was in front of him. And he goes, are you serious? He goes, you couldn't wait? Like, buddy, just take the fucking club and the head cover and get out. Mm. Like, you're yelling at a kid who you can clearly tell is in high school. I made you wait 30 seconds. So that's usually like, I mean, I get mad in retail stores now and then, but I always like, I like to think back and be like, you know what? I'm not going to yell at these people. Sometimes people can be dicks, but for the most part, some of the shit they do with their jobs are really terrible. That's why I don't like leaving dressing rooms a mess, because I used to have to clean up dressing rooms. And that is awful. I will tell you that terrible task at the end of the night.
No, I mean, yeah, service jobs and retail jobs, they're getting harder and harder, because the thing I hate about retail now is whenever you go into a store and like, I went into a store this week, a very, very well-known store. They've declined a lot in quality, but I still go in. I wanted some t-shirts.
Factory.
Yes. I wanted some t-shirts, and they didn't have any of the t-shirts I wanted in a size large. And then I'm like, they're like very politely, like, do you need any help? And I was like, do you have any larges? And he's like, no, but we can order online for you. And I'm like, I wouldn't be in the store if I wanted to order online, right? this is my stand-up set, by the way. So I'm still working on this material. So they, what I'm saying is, like, they have a tough job because there's no merchandise for them to sell anymore.
Yeah.
And they just get yelled at. So, you know, like, you never know what someone else is going through. Just going back to that video, it's just like, yeah, that's crazy. I mean, it's
I mean, you kind of do know exactly what he's going through because he put his whole life on the fucking podium when he said, I'm getting denied on dating sites. Like, so you do kind of know what they're going through.
Yeah, I guess. But, like, you know, not everyone's created the same. And so you never know what someone's mindset is when they go into a retail store. And I don't know. I guess I'm trying to be compassionate about it while also saying that he was being a big jerk too.
Yeah, I'm going to land here.
Is that the nuanced take?
I'm going to land on he could be going through some shit, but also fuck him.
Yeah, you shouldn't go in and yell at people, and you shouldn't say those things. But on the flip side, it's like, you know, is making a spectacle of it on the internet the best thing? I don't know. Well, I don't care.
Tough stuff from our guy. So yeah, look at the Bagel Man video. Anything else before we get into the old podcast here?
And
we did seamless transition. Is a bagel a taco?
I feel like our opening segment's like Plinko from The Price is Right.
Yeah.
We just kind of start in one place and just meander down to an endpoint, and
it's true.
Then we dive right into news.
It's true. Well, let's get into news.
I decided also when I was eating dinner tonight, Crouton Gang 2019.
What does that mean?
What?
I'm just saying, I don't feel like croutons in modern salad making techniques get enough love. And I'm just showing my appreciation for croutons.
Well, if anything, they're probably going to go on their way out. No, because keto is going to become like the more popular diet. It already was mostly, I think, last year, the most used one. And now it's going to be even more popular. And they don't like croutons in the salad.
I can't remember because I'm at my parents' right now. I'm in my parents' basement, my mom made me a salad, croutons, nice old school salad. I really liked it, enjoyable. But I can't remember ever going to a restaurant and getting croutons that wasn't on like a Caesar salad in the last 10 years. There's other things. There's other crunch items in there, like nuts. Mm,
sir, have you been to an Outback Steakhouse? Very good croutons.
Okay, yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but what I want to say is, Crouton Gang, let's just make sure we don't forget the croutons.
I like that.
Do you ever eat croutons right out the bag? That was a high school move by me all the time, the Italian seasoned croutons.
Oh, those are so good.
It's like eating chips, except way worse for you.
Have you been to a salad bar where they put I don't know what they call like the dressing holders. You know the classic white dressing holders with like the circular top?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen when people at salad bars put the croutons in the tubes?
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen that too.
That's ridiculous. That needs to go. Croutons, stay. Crouton tubes, get out.
Yeah, croutons are tong device topping. Let me use some tongs to get those croutons on.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Before I get into the news, though, this episode brought to you in part by Stitch Fix. Stitch Fix, we've talked about it plenty. Come on. Don't go and annoy the people in the brick and mortar stores. Get Stitch Fix to send you clothes on your own. That way you don't have to make them fold stuff in dressing rooms. Stitch Fix is an online personal styling service that delivers your favorite clothing brands right to your door. To get started, go to stitchfix.com/lights, answer some questions about your preferred style, and your personal shopper will ship you a box of clothes, shoes, and accessories. We've mentioned it before, just off the top, brands that you'll love, whether it's Nike to Adidas, Banana Republic, J. Crew, and much more. No commitment required, and you only pay for what you keep. Shipping, exchanges, and returns are always free. Plus, a $20 styling fee is automatically applied towards anything you keep from your box. You'll never have to think about looking good again. Get started at stitchfix.com/lights and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box at stitchfix.com/lights. Stitchfix.com/lights. Nothing like getting a big box of cool stuff. I almost said free stuff. It's not technically free. You got to pay for it, but 25% cheaper stuff.
I was almost at I was at Target and I almost bought that Stranger Things hot beef shirt.
Damn!
But I decided against it because I thought that would go against the spirit of the podcast.
Get the Steve pillow.
Steve, wait, have you watched it?
Not yet. But I hear it's great. I'm excited. I just got through the last of Ozark, the last available of Ozark.
Yeah, I've only heard positive things, really, for the most part. So,
I'm happy. I like Stranger Things. I always want to be careful with my apparel related to TV shows because it's a fine line to walk sometimes.
Maleficent. Boy, here's a movie. The sequel to the first Maleficent. This is Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, starring Angelina Jolie, Elle Fanning, Michelle Pfeiffer, Michelle Pfeiffer, Ed Skrein, and Chiwetel Ejiofor. Some other people as well, I do believe. However, this movie releases in October. They had their second trailer released, and I'm gonna be honest with you. This didn't do anything for me. Once again, this did nothing. I don't know. Some people must care about this. It might end up being a good movie. I thought the first Maleficent wasn't all that bad, but this is not appointment viewing for me, for sure.
Yeah. You know what I want to play right now, Jeff? I want to play a game with you, like the Saw movies, except without blood, but with a creepy puppet. I'm going to name a Disney park, and you're going to tell me which castle is there.
Okay.
So, like, kind of on the Maleficent train, right? Maleficent was the villain from Sleeping Beauty, correct? Mm-hmm. I want to see how well you know which castles are in which Disneylands, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so Hong Kong Disneyland.
Hong Kong? That one I don't know.
Okay, that's Sleeping Beauty.
Okay.
Which I think... probably the least impressive. Okay, let's go to Magic Kingdom in Orlando.
Magic Kingdom is Cinderella's castle.
Yes, you got that. Yeah. I would say that's probably the most impressive, right? That's typically the okay, what about Disneyland?
Disneyland is Sleeping Beauty as well, and I believe it's an exact replica of Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. And
I should have known that one.
The and what's a Disneyland Paris?
Disneyland Paris is like, it's like a weird mix of all the castles, I do believe.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I think you did very well. I think the Hong Kong one is kind of a weird one out, but I think you nailed it. The one in Disneyland Paris is Le Chateau de la Belle au Bois Dormant.
Well, the one in Shanghai is, I think, the biggest and is unbelievable. Shanghai Disney is apparently very cool. I will never go there because I don't like flying enough to go to Asia. But if I did, I probably would go, especially after that video online today of the fucking engine all fucked up. So
definitely not
making fuck any Asia one. Trips anytime soon.
I didn't see that, but I
don't watch. Don't watch.
Well, because I was doing some the reason I asked you that is because I was trying to find a way to make this Maleficent discussion interesting. Because I have nothing to add to this movie other than the fact that it's definitely Maleficent. I think Angelina Jolie was great in it. I love the look of her, but I don't really care about the story. But I do care about the castle lore at Disney parks, it turns out. And I did find out that I think there are no structures at Disney World Orlando higher than 200 feet, just so they wouldn't have to put airport blinkers up top.
That's correct. They don't put blinkers on it.
To tie it back to airport travel. But those castles look a lot more impressive due to the force perspective.
I think I'll land with you, Trill, on this, except I'll add the addendum that I don't really care about the castle structure or layout. But yeah, don't really have much to add about Maleficent. I do like Angelina Jolie. I do think she was good in the OG. But yeah, storyline just doesn't really captivate me really that much. I don't know. What about you, Jeff?
I'd rather just talk about the fact that Ken, Jack, and I just saw Lion King.
Yeah, way better.
I liked Lion King a fair amount. I would say it's probably the best Disney live action remake. It's pretty stunning to look at. Like, it looks unbelievable.
I'll say it deserves the VFX Oscar this year.
It will win it. Like, I have absolutely nothing in my head would allude to anything else. Like, I can't think of a way that doesn't win best visual effects. It is unbelievable. Like, it's unreal. It's very similar to the original. It adds a little bit here and there. It doesn't quite have the magic as that one because it's hard to have. Like, I think I don't want to give anything away in terms
of photorealistic. I haven't seen it, so I won't give it away. But I think the talk has been when you do photorealistic animals, it's hard to make them have expressions.
The mouths looked fine. That's one thing where I didn't agree with. Everyone was saying like, oh, like the mouths don't look right because it's weird when they're talking with the bird and everything. Like,
Look
totally fine. And I think the best way to hype people up for this is, do you guys remember when they showed the screenshot from Incredibles 2 and that you could see the fibers popping off Mr. Incredible's shirt and everyone was like, no wonder this took so long. This shit is crazy detailed. And it's like, look forward to for that times two in this movie, because it is that well done from a visual standpoint. But other than that, it's kind of like Jeff said, it's very close to the original. And I don't know. I want to talk about it more once we get to the review.
We're going to post a review tomorrow. Oh. So you can read our review. I think you nailed it. What people said is that it's hard to make the expression, and there's a couple songs, one in particular that has a lot of like pop and pizzazz to it. And you can't really do it if you go along the physics in which they did, which I know sounds crazy to say. I know. I'm not going to say it. You'll see. There's just one that like will always stick out to me from when I was a kid. And if they replicated that, it would look weird in the context of what they're trying to do with the movie. So I hate taking points off for that, but it's not even taking points off for the difference. It's just that it doesn't quite pop as much in certain spots. However, I think it is easily the best done out of all of them, maybe with Jungle Book close. Because then after that, I think it's a pretty decent drop off.
Yeah. Well, then I started like I kind of like went down a rabbit hole of reviews. And I mean, that was really the biggest thing. Everybody seemed to like it a lot. So I'm excited. And then it got me thinking back into Spider-Man and how cool like Spider-Man was. But then I realized how much Peter Parker had his mask off, just because it's hard to like have him have expressions with the mask on.
Yeah, exactly.
Gun to thinking like what a big deal like we'll just call it acting is to movies. And it's hard when you got VFX animals, but you know they pull it off. It's just
I'll say that there is definitely some voice acting. Maybe I wouldn't say issues, but maybe you could call it issues. But we'll talk about it more again once we get to the review. So that's what we call a tease, folks.
Folks, Sleeping Beauty Castle at Disneyland isn't really up to snuff.
No, I mean it's the original. It's very small. It's incredibly disappointing when you see it in person. That's all I can say. It's iconic, and I feel like true Disney people would be really irritated to hear me say that, but that's just the truth. Anyway, that's Maleficent. Yeah, the reviews for Lion King, that's basically what people are saying. The emotions are tough. Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner steal the show. They're fucking amazing. They're so good. So, so good. And Chiwetel Ejiofor is great as Scar as well. The first laugh in the movie is hearing Mufasa's voice, because it just reminded me of when James Earl Jones came back and played Darth Vader in Rogue One, and he made that really like bizarre quip to director Krennic: "Don't choke on your aspirations, director." Yeah. And you're like, "Oh, this is weird." Even though I loved it, because I'm a from comes to Star Wars, I'm a hog. But yeah,
Darth Vader's a one-liner guy.
He is, yeah. So again, I loved it. I think it's fantastic. It's also going to make a shitload of money, and I would see it early because theater's going to have a lot of theater's going to be a lot. If you like a good theater experience, this is for sure a movie to see in the opening weekend, and definitely in IMAX. We saw it in a really shitty, stupid Times Square theater, and it sucked. And I'm excited to see it like in an actual picture. Anyway, moving on.
You throw away your clothes after you saw it?
Where Ken Jack and I, it's disgusting. It's a disgusting theater. Like it's a truly gross theater.
While we were leaving, the lady behind me just kept clearing her nose on the way down the escalator. And like, I couldn't go anywhere because the whole crowd is exiting, but she just keeps doing that like thing behind my neck. And like, I could feel the air inhale. And like, all I wanted to do was get off that escalator more than anything on earth.
What was that TV show with Nathan Fillion, and he's the writer, and he helps
Nathan for you?
No, it's basically Murder, She Wrote, where like, you know, she was a murder writer and then she's brought in to solve mysteries. Like, I want a show where I'm brought in to solve mysteries, but it's me doing forensics on like soda. Like, and so I'm just like aging something by the fact that I'm like, this is a Fruitopia stain.
You said Nathan Fillion. I thought you said Nathan Fielder for a second. I fucked that up.
Yeah, you certainly did. Anyway, yeah, that gag didn't go over so well, but the joke was it probably still got Fruitopia stains down the ground of this theater. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. This is Fruit Punch Fruitopia. They haven't made this since 1998.
You ever see Nathan Fillion's ass? Bear from Firefly? You've seen it.
It's big.
Tomorrow's his day. Tomorrow's his day.
He's got a wagon.
Double cheeked up.
He does. Yeah. Okay. All right. We gotta move on. Hold on. I will say, Trill, you would love the tourist aspect of going through that theater when you leave, because you leave the theater and you go down through a Dave and Buster's and then an Applebee's and you walk out next door to a Madame Tussauds.
Oh, God. Oh, man.
There's like a private party going on at Dave and Buster's too while we're leaving, like a big buffet of Dave and Buster's goodies. Looked fun.
All that's missing is an M&M store.
Oh, it's nearby. Don't worry.
There you're saying there's an M&M song playing at the Dave and Buster's.
Don't worry. It's only like 2 blocks away.
Just take my family to New York. And I ruined the whole trip because I'm pouting the whole time because my wife wouldn't let me go to the M&M store.
Afraid you leave her for the green M&M.
I'm poor because I bought a $600 resin model fully detailed of the yellow M&M.
But the newer M&M commercials for the Nutella M&M, by the way, they eat the Nutella M&M. That's such a morbid twist on those M&M characters. They're cannibals.
I thought they did that to the pretzel one.
No, the pretzel one. No, the pretzel one's a little scared ass, but he's always like quivering and stuff. And then the caramel inside the caramel on them is David Cross. And then they just kill.
Eat me. Please don't. Please don't.
No, don't kill me.
They just murder the Nutella one. All right.
Anyone have an ice pick?
Let's move on. Here we go.
the advertising, I guess the account manager for the M&M's advertising account, just a guy just playing with M&M action figures at a desk.
Just adding to the lore day by day.
He does the voices at the pitch meetings.
You don't sound anything like JK, Fred. Stop.
Steve, we need a new Christmas commercial. Nope, I'm going to run the same one. They do exist.
All right, let's move on. Dora the Explorer, The Lost City of Gold. That's not the full, whatever. That's close enough. Isabella Moner, Michael Pena, Eva Longoria, Danny Trejo's in it. Benicio del Toro is Swiper, who we don't see in this trailer. Tamara Morrison.
No, we saw him in the trailer.
We saw Swiper in the trailer?
Yeah, Swiper was briefly in the trailer. I'll send you a screen grab.
In the OG?
Oh, no.
No, I'm serious. He was.
Okay.
He's the little fox with the Ninja Turtle Donatello headband, yes. Right?
Yeah. Tamara Morrison, who plays Jango Fett in this movie as well. But this trailer, it's a second trailer, and I had no thoughts on it. And then I waited till the end, and they, no pun intended, rip off back-to-back incredibly intense fart jokes. And not just fart jokes. They're just two people fart. And one one of the characters says that he ate
chili con queso.
Oh, yeah, he says, okay, I knew you were going to send a joke picture. You sent a picture of Dora the Explorer shooting Swiper in the back of the head with a gun.
Sorry.
Okay.
That was Ken Jack.
Okay, Ken Jack sent that. Okay.
No, Swiper was in this.
So
this is like, this is the movie's the plot to Mice and Men, or Lenny and George, or whatever that book was called.
Show me the Swiper.
Anyway, there's a really, yes, he's the guy says, I ate chili con queso, and he rips what can only be described as a very wet fart. And I don't know if I'm now more interested, or I might actually not watch this movie. I might just skip this movie.
I do have to say that I think this is the first thing that maybe we would potentially review that I am just generally uncomfortable with going around.
Yeah.
Like I've seen the kids movies, you know, I went to Aladdin, I've been to them all, but like this one is just like, I have no good reason to go to that by myself.
I used to watch it like a few times, I think, when I was younger. I think I watched it with my younger brothers a few times, but I mean, I think I'm with you. I think I'm not built for this movie. Although I think I'm also Jeff, and like probably like a few years younger than us are the people they're sort of marketing to because they want that nostalgia factor, but it's just not there for me. But that said, I do like the cast quite a bit. Like you said, Tamara Morrison, resident bad boy. We love him. He's our king. And we also, Michael Pena, big fan. And Eva Longoria. I haven't seen her in a while.
The Dora fourth wall break into the Michael Pena asking why she's doing that was a solid gag. They did that a lot in Dirtbag too, or Fleabag. So that always works for me.
It's weird that they usually don't do it in a trailer, I don't think, which is kind of like, I like it, but they usually save that for the movie because that's always a good like moment.
Oh yeah, that's what she used to do in the show,
remember?
I don't know. And this is happening. It feels weird.
Where do we land on the fart joke, though?
I think it was fine until the chili con queso line. That was too much.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely that was the line they stepped over where we can no longer review this movie. And they said chili con queso. They're canceled.
I don't know. I mean, fart jokes. I want to like fart jokes. And maybe I do like a good fart joke. But a fart joke in a trailer seems like, if we started with the Romeo and Juliet thing. Or the Sherlock Gnomes or whatever one had the fart jokes in the puddle. And it just seems like a bad sign for a movie when it's in the trailer.
It's a clear.
The Lion King has a fart joke in it, or a couple.
Spoiler alert, there are in the regular one. But Pumbaa, it's not a marketing. This was clearly, fine. Like, if it works in the movie, whatever. But like Romeo and Juliet, which was a much more egregious fart, by the way. Much more egregious fart placement. But this is strategic, and I think that's what stuck out to me. Like, that they were like, we got to put the fart joke in the trailer. We got to make sure the kids see it. Because it's serious enough where it goes above what the kids' movie was or the kids' show was. And now they're like, reel it back in a little bit. We still got the fart jokes. Even though I'm pretty confident, I can say without knowing that I guarantee you nobody farts in the Dora the Explorer cartoon.
Seems safe to bet. I want to come up with a name for this tactic, because what I think this is they're trying to do the thing where that's the last thing in the trailer before everything goes silent and it changes over to a new trailer in the movie, and that's the time to gauge everyone's reaction in the theaters. And I think they're banking on that fart joke happening and then kids saying, laughing and saying, I want to see that, and then people being like, yeah, I guess I want to see that too. Like the Crawl trailer, which I think Ken Jack saw, was barely a trailer. It was like a 10-second clip, and it got everybody talking in the theater about what they just saw.
It worked. Effective.
Yeah. But I feel like when you're in that theater and people are giving their reactions, and some people say, I want to see that, or start laughing. Like that's where the impressionable parents come in. They're like, well, God, if they find that funny, shit, shuts them up for 2 hours. I'm good. I'm going to go see Dora the Explorer.
It works.
The Michael Bay Dora the Explorer. We'll keep pushing that lie.
Did Dora the Explorer end like the cartoon?
Yeah, very violently too.
A meteor struck the jungle. No survivors. I don't know though, because I know SpongeBob's still on. I think
Dora's not in that umbrella of things. Dora is off the air. Dora ended in 2013. It's not in that umbrella of Nickelodeon where they do that strategic thing where they, actually it's coming back. What?
Yeah. Well, they shows get three seasons and they turn them because it's not fresh anymore. Cause a 13-year-old is now a 16-year-old, and a 13-year-old now, doesn't like the same things that the 16-year-old likes, but some things transcend that, like SpongeBob and Dora and,
6 years later, yeah, they are they're coming back and finishing the eighth season. It debuted like 2 days ago. Debuted on July 7th. How about that?
Yeah, and that one ended with Dora putting a gun down on a table and telling Swiper to make a decision. That it just cut to black. It's really fucked up.
There's a revolver here. There's one bullet. We're gonna take turns. Dora had some good guest stars. Johnny Weir, Hilary Duff, Mel Brooks, Alan Cumming. I didn't know she had the heat like that. Good for you, Dora.
She's got the pull. Let's move on. I'm going to let you guys pick here which one you want to talk about. Judy, a Judy Garland movie starring Renee Zellweger in the lead role, the famous Judy Garland. Or you can talk about G-Eazy possibly being cast as Elvis.
Take a wild guess which one I want to talk about.
Let's talk about them both, because I like the Judy trailer.
The Judy trailer was really nice.
I thought that when you sent that to me, or when we first started like putting it up on our radar, I thought it was going to be young Judy Garland. And I mean, she has a great story, by the way, because like she was eaten up by the Hollywood apparatus. But this one's like a later in life Judy Garland who's still trying to be relevant and still trying to get work. And I think that's an interesting twist on the celebrity. And Renee Zellweger, I thought, looked very good in that role. And so I'm really excited for it. It's based off of a West End London production. I don't know if it was a musical or just a play. So I'm looking forward to that.
Judy Garland, I don't care. I will say Elvis, kind of interested in the Elvis story, but G-Eazy, no sir. Not interested in Gerald Easy's Elvis. He doesn't even want to be in it. Like the guy who's making the movie, I forget his name offhand, he didn't pick out G-Eazy. G-Eazy is campaigning to be Elvis. Like, so he's not even auditioning or anything. He just apparently has sent like a shit ton of tapes and auditions to the director to be like, hey, let me be Elvis. And like, guy's like, how do you get my number? Stop mailing me tapes. And so like, that's the extent of it. But I don't want Gerald Easy. And again, the G in G-Eazy does stand for Gerald. I'm not making it up. Like, his name is like Gerald Gillum. Sounds like the mailman in a town where everyone's a bear. Shout out to, I think, Dogboy, who made that tweet. But hate you. I hate G-Eazy.
Gerald Easy.
Gerald Gillum. No, don't want him as Elvis. I'm all on the Miles Teller as Elvis. That's the role he was born to play. He looks just like him. I think he can kind of sing like him a little bit. And he's got the chops. Let him play Elvis.
He should be Elvis.
Yeah, Miles Teller has that like Oxford, Mississippi, like born in a frat house look that's perfect for Elvis.
I agree 100%. Elvis best known for having sex with Forrest Gump's mom.
I don't know much about G-Eazy, but I associate him with leather jackets.
Yeah, that's right.
You're exactly correct. In the graphic we tweeted out, he was wearing a leather jacket too.
Well, I feel like every picture I've seen of G-Eazy, he's wearing a leather jacket. And so if you showed me a picture of a guy with, you know, just like maybe a 28-year-old, it's an attractive man wearing a leather jacket, I'll probably be like, that's either the guy who rides a motorcycle at the campus or G-Eazy.
And you'd be right, because it'd be one of those two things.
Or both.
Maybe, yeah. He's still in school. G-Eazy, working on his degree.
G-Eazy.
Veterinary medicine.
We're caught in a trap.
All right. Let's move on.
Ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Todd Phillips, director of the Joker movie, just called Joker with Joaquin Phoenix. He made this quote to Empire Magazine. We didn't follow anything from the comic books, which people are going to be mad about. We just wrote our own version of where a guy like Joker might come from. That's what was interesting to me. We're not even doing Joker, but the story of becoming Joker. It's about this man. I like that answer. Whether it's good or not remains to be seen. I have a lot of faith in Todd Phillips. I think it's going to be pretty fucking good. But I like that answer. I don't think – it's nice to see somebody not worried about what will be toxic fandom, I'm sure, from some parts, whether it's big or small. Like, there are going to be people who lash out and get fucking angry because they'll do it no matter how good or bad a comic book movie is. You see it with the bad ones. You see it with the good ones. I mean, you saw it with Avengers Endgame, which had insane praise from everyone. You see it with the bad ones as well. So I imagine there will be people angry. However, I like that he doesn't care. Just make a good Joker movie. Like, the thing is, they make – it might have been James, might have been our guys from the Weekly Planet, might have said this, but I know someone said it who I heard it recently said, they make new comics all the time. The movies don't have to be off the comics. They can be making their own they're making their own comic, essentially. It's just in movie form. It's okay. And I like this. Give us something new, give us something unique. I'm really excited for this movie. I really am.
Yeah, and in comics, too, there's a lot of bad stuff in comics. Don't forget that. Like, there's a lot of stupid shit that's happened in comics. So maybe it's unfair because I'm not a big comic guy.
Superman is racist in the comics, just saying.
But it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing if they deviate from it. I think where they're going to run into – like where they're just going to run into issues on this is if the movie's bad. And if the movie's bad to begin with, whether or not it's based off the comics, there's always going to be an angle people are going to take to like, oh, you either didn't use any source material that was good or you strayed too far from it and that's why it was bad.
Yeah, it's like you guys are saying, it just needs to be a competent movie. I don't care whether or not it derives from any specific comic. And I think maybe even more particularly in my case, just because I haven't read like The Killing Joke or any of the other comic books related to the Joker, it's just as long as it's a competently made movie, I'm happy. Although we'll say that I know someone that read the script and said it was kind of insane. Twisted, some might say. But we'll see how it rolls.
It's going to come down to Joaquin Phoenix's performance. I mean, let's be honest. Like, regardless...
Joaquin?
Joaquin Noah.
What?
Sorry.
Man, remember his shot? His shot style, that grounded two-hand jumper?
I'm sorry. I was reading his name, and I just said how it looked to me.
Famous bull joke.
Sorry. Jokin.
Joke. That's his name for the movie. He changed his name for the sake of the movie.
Jobin.
You're right, though. It is really going to come down to
Jay Phoenix's performance. Joaquin.
But yeah, Todd Phillips Joker coming out in the fall. Excited for that. We should be getting a new trailer soon. I would imagine Comic-Con. Actually, I don't know if DC's going to Comic-Con. I forget. Regardless, we're going to get something soon. We are due for it. They were playing IMAX again the other day, so I imagine it'll pop up very soon. Moving on to The Big Lebowski, there's going to be a spinoff. We incorrectly tweeted sequel. That's my mistake, because it's definitely a spinoff called The Jesus Rolls. Again, a spinoff to the Coen Brothers movie. It's going to star and be directed and written by John Turturro. Will also feature the likes of Bobby Cannavale. John Hamm is in this, Susan Sarandon as well. We don't know too much about it. What he said was, it feels like a good time to release a transgressive film about the stupidity of men who try and fail and try to better understand and penetrate the mystery of women. Is that a surprising love story? He said,
okay.
I don't know. I don't have many thoughts on this yet. We interviewed John Turturro, great guy. I can't tell you I'm that excited for this. I really like The Big Lebowski. I'm not like a major Big Lebowski follower like some people are, but it's a really fantastic movie. I don't quite know how I feel about this, because you obviously don't have two of the best parts from it in John Goodman and Jeff Bridges, but I will give it a chance. Like, I mean, this could be very good, because again, I do like John Turturro and I like his vision.
Friend of the pod.
Though, but I mean, friend of the pod, but I'm not gonna beat her on the bush. I can't lie and say I'm very excited about this. But if he's going in a different direction, not just trying to do some sort of ham-fisted fan service follow-up to Big Lebowski, then I kind of respect that more.
I'm just pissed he didn't tell us. Why didn't he tell us when he interviewed him that he was planning on doing this? Kind of fucked up on his part. I will say that I do kind of like the cast for this a little bit, and I'm willing to give it a chance just because he's a friend of the pod. Only if he comes on to the podcast to talk about it before it goes for the press tour. Otherwise, I'm bashing it.
The Stella Artois commercial was the official sequel to The Big Lebowski.
That's true. Yes.
Don't forget the way they hype that up.
Which we're going to get to something really quickly at the end of news related
to
that.
Very similar. Very similar vibes, right?
Maybe even worse.
Yeah.
Worse. We'll get to that in a second. But anyway, again, I respect going a different direction. I'm just a little skeptical because it's a spinoff. It's related to what we got, but a lot of these spinoffs don't always work. So I'm holding back a touch, just a touch.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I thought that like that Coen Brothers touch was what made it, you know, The Big Lebowski work. It could have easily been ridiculous, very easily. So yeah, I don't know what to expect, but I trust it's Turturro's character, so I trust him to take the spirit of the character and execute upon something that's at least interesting, and we can start from interesting and then maybe work our way to good once we know more.
Moving on to Ghostbusters, talking about old movies. This is basically a sequel. Ghostbusters 2020, starring Paul Rudd, which we recently learned, Carrie Coon, Finn Wolfhard, McKenna Grace, and then likely the return of Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, and Dan Aykroyd, as well as Sigourney Weaver. They have added two new actors, Logan Kim and Celeste O'Connor, younger actors. We'll see. the more young people the more young people they cast, the more wary I get that it's going to be like some sort of weird Stranger Things type spin. I'm obviously a bit reserved on this. I'm still, I guess not snake bit. I'm not like a big Ghostbusters fan, but I still have the Ghostbusters 2017, 2016, whatever came out in my head, which was just a travesty. And we've talked about this. Kids being the main characters and driving forces of movies has not been our favorite. Godzilla, I liked a lot. And it was a weird plot point with Millie Bobby Brown, and they just made her scream the whole movie. Wasn't really her fault. And then Jacob Tremblay in The Predator was one that really sticks out, which was just a bizarre fucking movie and plot and storyline. So, again, I'm reserved on this one as well, even though Paul Rudd, it's tough to against Paul Rudd.
Yeah, I think that's something we said when the Paul Rudd news got announced, right, is like who has more goodwill with movies and audiences than like Paul Rudd? It's like him and The Rock. Like you put them in almost anything and people automatically like it. As far as the kids casting goes, like don't really know either of them too well, obviously. Or most of them, both of them, I believe, are relative newcomers. But yeah, I mean, Ghostbusters, we've talked about it like the last 10 times we've mentioned it. But I think I'm not a huge like overall fan. Like it's obviously a classic in sci-fi and I have to say comedy, I guess, a little bit as well. But just not necessarily my thing. It doesn't hold the same place in my personal heart as it does for like everyone else's. So I guess it could mean I understand like the weird polarizing response still, even with Rudd being cast on it.
Yeah, might as well just cast Millie Bobby Brown at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, by the way, she was rumored for Eternals and that apparently is not true. I don't know where we've landed on that. The rumor got wild enough where it's kind of out there. But she was always rumored for the Eternals and it was shot down by Kevin Feige, like pretty sternly shot down. Like, no, she's not in this movie. But it's kind of leaked out, but it sounds like that's a no.
Yeah. Speaking of Finn Wolfhard, big Goldfinch trailer right before the Spider-Man.
Oh, nice
movie I saw. And it wasn't really the audience for it, I don't think.
No.
Like people didn't really know how to feel about it. It was very, very confusing because it's a very intense trailer.
Super intense. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very intense.
Anyway, I'm excited for this Ghostbusters. I think that I've come around on it. Maybe I've talked myself into like at least them going the younger direction allows them to do something different with it. And maybe it isn't like, I think the fact that you have like adult Ghostbusters, the question's always going to be there from like whoever is interested in it is like, okay, why isn't it Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, or Sigourney Weaver? Like, why aren't they in these main roles? So I think like by having child actors, you kind of like open it up to something new and different. And like going back to like the Ghostbusters that just like, you know, we talk about it all the time, just wasn't a good movie. But it's like, it kind of feels like an attempt to distance it from that and distance it from the main franchise while also doing something like unique. So I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to talk myself into it. Then you get back to the problem is like, I'm always thinking like they need to create a new whole genre of films where it's just like 14-year-olds riding around on bicycles.
It's what it is.
Trying to solve some supernatural mystery, which maybe is kind of what Scoob's going to be. So who knows?
Oh, man. We finally saw the logo for Scoob. It's a shame they dropped the acronym. Still wanted to figure that out. But yeah, Ghostbusters, they added more kids. So
yeah, that logo for Scoob, that definitely was a drawing of Scooby-Doo and the word Scoob. So
you can't take that away from it.
So far, so good.
It's Scooby-Doo. Red Notice, another friend of the pod, Rawson Thurber, he'll be directing this movie. It'll be featuring Dwayne Johnson. It's his movie. It's his heist thriller. And Gal Gadot. And now it'll also be featuring Ryan Reynolds. But it's going to go to Netflix. It's going to be one of their biggest casts of all time. Maybe right their biggest.
Bullshit.
Yeah, so immediately after we read a story about how Netflix is going to be cutting back on that type of thing, they literally do that. Universal didn't want the movie, I imagine because of how much it's worth. Like there's a lot of money involved here. Netflix picked it up.
So here's the thing, right, is that they didn't necessarily say they weren't going to do projects like that anymore. They said they were going to be super picky, right? And so this is going to have on its face right now, at least I think that's what the Deadline said, $130 million budget, which, I mean, it's big, obviously not out of the question for a Rock, Ryan Reynolds, Gal Gadot movie. And I just said it like 5 seconds ago, there's very few people in Hollywood that have greater goodwill than The Rock and Paul Rudd. You put The Rock in anything, people are going to come out in droves to watch it. And I don't know how, again, they measure success metric with Netflix, but a lot of fucking people are going to watch this. If it's good or bad, doesn't matter. A lot of fucking people are going to tune in for this.
I agree with that. It's quality over quantity, I guess, if they're going to be putting money into it. Invest in this. Because at the bare minimum, the big names draw you into it. And whether or not it's good or not, like I guess for Netflix, as long as you make it over that 75% mark, they'll send out a press release over it. You'll be included in those watch numbers, baby.
Yeah, and we're big fans of Rawson as well. Also, Rawson, director of Dodgeball and Underdog Story, a true underdog story. Rest in peace, Rip Torn, from that movie. Big rest in peace.
All right, one more thing. Trill, you alluded to it, and actually it was not planned. Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul were teasing something on Instagram and Twitter, and I kind of fell for it, and a lot of people did. And we shouldn't. We should stop fucking falling for shit like this, because it never, almost never, pans out to anything. It turns out Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul, because there are a lot of breaking – it's lining up with rumors about Breaking Bad movies and Breaking Bad projects. They released the fact that they have a joint – what's the alcohol?
It's like – it's a spinoff of UV Blue.
It's Mezcal.
No, it's Mezcal. Okay. All right.
I think it's Mezcal. I like the UV Blue.
Okay, yeah, their own brand of Mezcal. There we go. They said 3 years ago, we sat in a sushi bar in New York talking about life and what we could possibly do down the road together. We had the time of our lives while shooting Breaking Bad and truly built a very special bond. Yada, yada, yada. Follow us at Dos Hombres and at Mezcal to hear more about Mezcal and Dos Hombres. So, like, boy, people really thought there was a big project coming, so much so that I at the last second cut it out of our rundown because I wasn't quite sure. And I'm like, oh, we should maybe talk about what this could be. Ended up being nothing. And it's like their Big Lebowski thing. The Big Lebowski thing was more obvious because that was a Super Bowl commercial, and they're not going to reveal something like that at Super Bowl commercial. That's ridiculous. But it's happened recently with Spider-Man, because Marvel or Sony, somebody was teasing a Spider-Man thing, and they started the countdown at the number 4. And they did it with like the lettering 4, and people were like, holy shit, are they releasing the Spider-Man 4 story from Sam Raimi in comic book form? And that ended up not being what it was. It's like J.J. Abrams is like doing a Spider-Man comic or something. But they fooled everyone, and people were convinced, and then they got duped. And this is another example of that. God, you got to not get your hopes up about shit like this. We've got to learn our lesson here.
The picture that they posted with Bryan Cranston handing the cup to Aaron Paul, it looks like – Aaron Paul lost a bet. Now he has to drink Bryan Cranston's pee. I mean, that's what the picture looks like.
Rancid piss. It's not even really yellow.
No, but like Bryan Cranston's cracking up, and Aaron Paul's just got this look on his face like, oh boy, not again.
Kind of a dick move on their part, to be honest, because they knew exactly what they were doing, and no one's going to drink their Mezcal, no offense. I will drink aviation gin from Ryan Reynolds, good friend of the pod, and myself, mostly.
We should
I respect it. It was basically the smock and tweet strategy.
I'm gonna send Trill a bottle of the Crystal Skull vodka, and every time we talk about Ghostbusters 2020, you have to take a shot of Dan Aykroyd's vodka.
That or Avatar.
That's fine. I would like a section at a higher end liquor store to be organized by celebrity.
Ooh.
Because with all these celebrity vodkas and tequilas. I mean, you got Casamigos from George Clooney. You got Crystal Skull from Dan Aykroyd. A Red Stag from Kid Rock. I don't know. I need to know whose drink I'm drinking.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. All right, that's it. That's it. Anything else from news you want to talk about? I think we got through everything.
Do people still drink Fireball?
I don't.
Yeah, people still drink it. I see it get ordered. I see it get ordered all the time. Asterisk. I order it plenty.
It was always a good shot, you know, to do because it you know, you're doing a shot, but you weren't actually doing like some hard.
Yeah. So I don't know the alcohol content of it, but I always just assume that it's super low because I don't.
It's a liqueur.
Yeah,
I think it's basically a liqueur. I think it's good. It's Heartburn City. I just didn't know because you know I know White Claw is what's popular with the youth, like
no,
you guys
truly
these
is.
Days.
Truly is what's popular with the kids these days. That and Body Armor.
Okay, Spike Seltzer is popular with the...
No, that's an actual brand name is Spike Seltzer. Just don't say that either.
That's true, yeah. That's crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that I don't know how that happens.
Not just a beer named beer, like in Homer Simpson or something. In Homer Simpson, in The Simpsons or something.
That really is true. That's essentially what it is. Like, hey, did you get wine? Yeah, that's not the wine. I want the brand wine.
There's definitely a wine brand like with a homonym wine though, right? Like named like Whine.
Probably.
Spike Seltzer sounds like a Final Fantasy character.
Yeah, a little bit. Spike Seltzer used like whiplash on you.
All right, let's get into it. Spider-Man Far From Home. This will be a spoiler review. I'll put in a time code. We're going to get into the non-spoiler section and just give very brief thoughts because it's a tough movie to talk about without mentioning spoilers. And it's just more fun to talk about spoilers, right? Like let's call a spade here. Spider-Man Far From Home released last weekend or last Tuesday, released during a weird time. Shout out to Sony for releasing it on $5 Tuesdays at most movie theaters. I'm sure that ended up going out well. Following the events of Avengers Endgame, Spider-Man must step up to take on new threats in a world that has changed forever. He's encountering a brand new character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Mysterio, played by Jake Gyllenhaal, also known as Quentin Beck. Zendaya is in this movie. Jacob Batalon, the kid who plays Ned, is back. Samuel Jackson, Marissa Tomei, Colby Smulders, Jon Favreau, J.B. Smoove, Martin Starr, who you probably most recognize from Silicon Valley. The cast for Spider-Man Homecoming is mostly back. Obviously, Michael Keaton, his character, the Vulture, is in jail. It's got a pretty good score on Rotten Tomatoes, pretty decent score on Metacritic, 69% on Metacritic, which is pretty decent for a sequel like that, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes as well. Good audience score. I gave this thing a 91. I think it's a top 10 MCU movie. I absolutely fucking loved it. Shout out to Jake Gyllenhaal, Mysterio, one of my favorite Marvel characters already. We'll get more into his character shortly and what he does and his future. But it was excellent. It was very funny. It carved out its own niche. I guess that Homecoming kind of paved the way for in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It has its own style, has its own feel. It doesn't feel like it's just a paint-by-numbers, formulaic MCU movie. Tom Holland is the best Spider-Man. That's just my opinion, but I think he's the best Spider-Man, hands down. He embodies the role and what the neighborhood, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, neighborhood watchdog, young kid should be. He's fun, awkward, goofy, and then when he slips into the role, he's kind of a badass. Loved it start to finish, flowed well, some shocking things. We got to talk about one thing in particular. Sets up the next phase of the MCU perfectly because Spider-Man's going to probably be the biggest part of it. You'd have to figure, and the future Spider-Man characters we haven't met yet, like the Osborn family, obviously Oscorp. But I love this Spider-Man Far From Home, 91 out of 100 for me, 92 out of 100 from the audience.
I bumped it down a point, 89 out of 100. We talk about it nonstop on this movie, or on this podcast, rather. It's really, really hard to make a sequel to a successful movie, and because it's an uphill battle from the start. Like, you have a bar that's set super high that you need to exceed in order to be called successful. And, you know, I thought it did it. I think it was, like, on par, if not slightly better than Homecoming. And, you know, it hit every mark you wanted out of, I would say, anything Marvel, especially post-Endgame, which was such a phenomenon in its own self. And it's individual, which is kind of what I like. It has, like, a very unique flair, which is what I think sets it apart from a lot of other things in the MCU. SFX are great. The suits are great. The chemistry between the cast is great. Jake Gyllenhaal, really great. I had super high hopes, which is kind of like a problem going into a movie for his performance. And, like, so it was really easy to be let down. And he did it. Fucking nailed it, man. I mean, that's really, really, really tough coming into the MCU, especially as a big name actor that's been, like, kind of doing more, especially lately, low level Paul Dano independent movie shit, and just fucking nailed on a big budget film. And he did it. And, you know, go see it. We're going to talk about more the Wombs part I really want to talk about in spoilers. But yeah. It's great. You should definitely go watch it.
Yeah, I give it a 90. I thought it was very, very fun. Spider-Man was very far from home, so
he was
lived up to that. It did a really good job, and there were parts where I think I felt like I wasn't gonna like it that I did actually end up liking it, which relate more to the spoilers. But they captured the whole, and this is what I really like about what they're doing with Spider-Man, is they're capturing the whole aspect of him just being a dumbass, goofy high schooler very well. And I guess that's easier to do when your high school Peter Parker's not 28 years old coming into the movie. that's an overstatement. But it's not just Tom Holland. It's the supporting characters as well. I really like Zendaya's take on MJ. I thought she did a great job in this movie. But like, also, and it's funny because she's also really great in Euphoria, where she's also playing a high schooler as well. And she's not too far off from that age. I think she's 22, 23, something like that. But she nailed it. Everybody nailed it. It was a really good way, like we said, to cap off this phase of the MCU. I don't really know how much that means, but it does feel like it sets up something to go forward in the future.
The capping off and the leading into the next phase is kind of the most important thing here for me in terms of like the big picture, because you don't want a movie that worries too much on making sure that it succeeds in following Avengers Endgame and leading you into what's now a very important thing for the studio. You don't want to make sure it trips over that, and it didn't. But at the same time, you also, as a fan of the MCU, wanted to set it up well, and it did that. Tough to talk about without spoiling anything, so if you haven't seen Spider-Man Far From Home, I would skip ahead right here.
To avoid spoilers for Spider-Man Far From Home, skip to 1:23:22. I'm on the street recording this because we're not in my apartment late at night, so I'm going to ask a random person on the street, what do you think about Guy Fieri, good or bad?
Great.
Okay, good. That's a random person I don't know. They confirm Guy Fieri, great.
All right, spoilers for Spider-Man Far From Home. Let's start off with Mysterio. That's kind of the big thing. The Mysterio twist comes halfway through the movie. It shouldn't be too much of a surprise that Mysterio is a villain. He's part of the Sinister Six. The Sinister Six is going to be a big part of this entire cinematic universe. You also had Numan Akar. I don't know how to say his name. He played Dimitri, and there's rumors that Dimitri is the Chameleon. Who is kind of like a shapeshifter who can like change his face, basically, a la like Mission Impossible. So he could be a part of the Sinister Six as well. We have to have Vulture, Michael Keaton. You saw Scorpion in the last movie as well in a post-credit scene. So Mysterio is a big part of that. I think he's still alive. You have the twist midway through where he becomes evil. He used to work for Tony Stark. It connects back to Barf, which we first saw in Civil War. They kind of had a funny scene where Jake Gyllenhaal was behind the scenes with Tony Stark when he says barf in front of the entire MIT crowd. Then you see the kid who plays Ralphie from A Christmas Story is back.
Yep.
He got yelled at by Jeff Bridges in the first movie of the MCU, Iron Man. He's back in the movie. That was a fucking really cool callback. A cool callback that wasn't like punch you over the face fan service, and it fit in the movie perfectly and it made sense. I loved that. And then in the end, you see him take those glasses, the Edith glasses that Tony Stark wanted to hand over to Peter Parker that control all the Stark tech. He takes them over, fights Spider-Man. Spider-Man beats him. But at the end, Spider-Man takes the glasses back and he immediately gets the rights back to use Edith, which to me, he didn't take the transfer back. And I'm curious if it's built into the system that it automatically goes back to him if he puts them on. However, he had to like give permission to give them over to Quentin Beck. And then his just worked for him. So it leads me to believe that Mysterio had some shit set up because Ralph from A Christmas Story, his character, also downloaded all the illusions and all the drone stuff and left right as Mysterio was quote-unquote dying at the end of the battle, pre-post-credit scene, which we'll get into in a minute. So I think Mysterio's still alive. I thought Jake Gyllenhaal did a great job portraying the character as like a hero in the beginning and a mysterious character and then turning him into a pretty angry, nerdy tech villain. Mysterio is kind of a weird character. I think he's like an illusionist, VFX illusionist in the comics, and it's kind of what we get here. He's wearing like a mocap suit. So overall, the Mysterio twist, all that, I thought it worked perfectly. I was a big fan.
A question about Mysterio I just thought of. Why did he said to Fury, right, that he's from an alternate dimension, right? Like that's the whole setup. Like that's how he earns Fury's trust. Why did he introduce himself with his government name, which he also used to develop Stark Tech, one of the biggest private military contractors in the entire world? Like, would Fury just not Google him and be like, oh, you're a developer of software for the world's biggest defense contractor?
So that's the only thing I don't know. Like, is this actually in Quentin Beck?
I guess, like, and it can't be, right? Because, like, he said like, all the people in, like, his crew or whatever all knew him as Quentin Beck. So like, I'm only assuming he didn't change his name only for their purposes.
Yeah, you know? I would like to know that. That would be something interesting to find out. Also, that's the other thing. So I guess I'm going to skip the mid-credit scene and go to the end credit where it's revealed that Talos, the Skrull, and his wife are actually playing Fury and Maria Hill the whole movie. So maybe that plays into it. So this I didn't know. Robbie Fox told me this today. The trailer, when they're revealing Quentin Beck is from another dimension, he says he's from Earth, just not ours. That's what Nick Fury says. But in the movie, it's changed, and he says, he's from Earth, just not yours. So he actually says that. There's a bunch of hints throughout the movie that it's definitely not Nick Fury and that it's a Skrull. He talks about Kree sleeper cells. He kind of emphasizes the looks can be deceiving. He has a couple lines that are just not Nick Fury lines. And when you go back and I saw it again, I saw it like three times now, you kind of pick up on those things. And it's kind of funny. They laid them in there subtly, but you could pick up on the fact that that isn't actually Nick Fury.
I just think that they should have done – this is my one gripe with Beck as a whole as a character. Is I think they should have done a better job establishing how he was able to wipe his entire identity off the face of the earth and come out clean on the other end. Because, like, they always make S.H.I.E.L.D. and, like, you know, Nick Fury and all of his assets something that's, like, insanely overreaching, like, global proportion surveillance. Like, they were able to put together, like, the S.H.I.E.L.D. Project Insight, for example, in Winter Soldier. They were able to put together, like, these algorithms that could hunt down every single person on Earth that based on like what their future actions might be and like all this crazy like facial recognition shit. And they couldn't figure out that this guy worked for Stark Tech. Like,
so that is
that's one thing where I really wish that they did a better job of explaining how he was able to wipe himself completely off the face of.
But like, he may not have, which is a fair point, but he may not have, because John Watts, the director, mentioned that part of the Fury thing was they needed to figure out a way to have Nick Fury get duped. And he's like, Nick Fury is undupable. He is. So what he's like, I think the best thing for us to do is to have him off world. And he's a Skrull, and the Skrull is imitating him and doing a very good job at being Nick Fury, but doesn't quite have all of the nuances of Nick Fury. You bring a good point, because he still could be in a database, but I'm curious. I'm imagining that's something they do address, because as you know, they end up addressing everything.
Like, Nick Fury gets duped a lot, like a lot actually. Like, they always joke around how he never trusts anybody, but like, he gets duped in Winter Soldier, he gets duped in Age of Ultron, he gets duped like a fair amount in like even the ones after Captain Marvel. So I just thought that there has some way they could have at least explained it, because the whole scene where, and maybe Cheryl, you talk about this a little bit, we're like the big reveal, right? Where Quentin, like, all the holographs go away, and he's talking to his team for the first time as like the actual like bad guy, and like he explains a lot. Like, they do a lot of exposition in that scene, and they show how everything came together. And I was expecting in that point just a hint as to how that happened.
Yeah, I didn't think about any of that because I'm an idiot. But good points, fellas.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think it's a very fair point. I didn't bother me, but again, that's a point that I'm not going to argue against that really too much. Like, I think they already kind of tried to explain it. Like, it's also been brought up because John Watts made that comment about it, about like why Nick Fury was a Skrull in this movie. But it is a fair point. Yeah.
So they basically did an Incredibles, right? A variation of an Incredibles. Maybe unfair to call it an Incredibles, but you know, there are a lot of people that didn't like Tony Stark very much, and that's fair. And Quentin Beck was one of them. And the big reveal came in this scene. And when I first saw it, I was like, oh, I don't know how much I like this. But I ended up liking it a lot, because I think the character worked better. I think Jake Gyllenhaal played it really well, because he was unhinged at some parts, but he wasn't too totally unhinged, I guess. Like, he was still grounded. And very precise, and so I like that. But it ended up working very well. Like, in some respects, I kind of wish he, like, I hope he comes back, first off, like, because it's a shame, like, Marvel seems to do this where they take great villains, Killmonger, et cetera, and then they kill him off, and then they just don't get to come back. Thanos kind of addressed that, because at least we got him for two movies, and he's probably the best MCU villain. But I kind of wish he did have like regular ass powers, but it sets him up to do a whole lot with it. I'm fine with it. And again, I'm not a comic book guy, so maybe it's true to the comics. So like, I went from being like somewhat tepid on the reveal to like really liking it, especially by the end when, you know, the big showdown happens in the connecting tower of the tower bridge or whatever. So I really enjoyed Jake Gyllenhaal. Gorgeous, gorgeous hairline, by the way. Hairline looked phenomenal here.
Yeah, I believe his – I know a fair amount about Mysterio, but I don't know the comics like totally true to form, but I believe people are very satisfied with it, because that's like what the character essentially is. He's a trickster. He's a trickster, future DC character.
I'm the Joker, baby.
I really thought – I liked that they brought in the Spidey sense a little more, which they haven't totally called it yet, that yet. And I'd be surprised – there's a chance they never do that. Like, I feel like that's just part of, like, the way this movie goes. Like, they're a lot, like, cheekier. And I want to get to the opening of the movie as well and how they talked about the snap. But, like, I feel like they may never actually call it the Spidey sense, which I'm okay with. Like, I think that's kind of like how these movies go. They're a little more off the beaten path than the rest of the MCU. But one of my favorite Marvel Cinematic Universe fight scenes ever was essentially that, like, it's the drone fight. It's the cloak drone fight. The illusion fight.
Using the Force. So when, yeah. when he does a Luke.
Yeah.
He uses the Force.
More or less, yeah. Projections.
Yeah, the fight with the projections where he's fighting himself. He has his old costume, his new costume. He sees a dead skeleton Tony Stark. It is such a cool, different vibe of a fight in a showdown for a hero and a villain. Absolutely loved it. Had me on the edge of my seat. It was intense. It was very perfectly done, and that's like what Mysterio brings to the table. He's mm-hmm. deceptive, the illusions. I thought it was done for what I know with the character perfectly. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of the Scarecrow stuff from the Arkham video games.
Or even really from Batman Begins too, because it was the same sort of bullshit where he said dealt with his victims through like that hallucinogenic state. And the visuals when he did that, especially the mid fight scene where he gets him hit by the train or whatever, like that one was really good because you really didn't know like when what was happening. Like when Nick Fury comes back and shoots him, and you're like, oh shit, like okay, this part's over. And then like he finds out that was an illusion too. Like it's I think they did that aspect of it really well. Like when to do a real reveal and when to do a dupe reveal. And I don't know, man, they really nailed it. And again, it's really, really hard to make a sequel off a movie that's already very good. And I loved Homecoming a lot. And I think the only thing that really stood out to me as far as not liking this movie, and again, I'm mostly just playing contrarian for the or devil's advocate for this, is just that I did think this was a tad bit long. Like Homecoming whizzed by, felt so quick. And there was definitely a point during this movie where I felt like, okay, like there's a lot of stuff has happened, and I don't get the sense that this is wrapping up anytime soon.
The pacing wasn't an issue for me. I had to hold off a little bit and like think about it. And I think part of my issue with seeing it the first time was the fact that I sat in the fucking front row. I was so much more comfortable seeing it the second time, and I felt a little long the first time, and I didn't get that sense the second time. I think it maybe could have been tightened up a little bit in some areas. I think that'd be probably my biggest gripe, like just in the beginning, like I'm sure they could have found some stuff to tighten up, especially in like the initial touristy stuff and then moving around. And it seems like a lot of back and forth with Fury and Beck and Peter Parker. So yeah, I could see that there, but I will say seeing it again reaffirm that sitting in the front row is the fucking worst. I don't know how anyone does it. And I know one person who does it. You know who that is? One person Brody. Brags about doing it. Richard Brody.
Yep. Good old Richard Brody, Santa Claus himself.
Who has only disliked movies people like this year. Fucking unbelievable.
He was at our screener. He was at that screening, remember?
Unbelievable. Hated it. Hated Midsummer. Hated Last Black Man in San Francisco. I mean, anything that's like top of the fucking list on like Rotten Tomatoes or anything, he's just against it. That's contrarian to be contrarian. Anyway, I digress. Beginning of the movie. Do you like how they tackled the snap, which they called the return the blip?
Hilarious.
I thought that was perfect. It was very on the nose, almost fourth wall breaking. It was very nearly fourth wall breaking. They literally said, we're on to the next phase. They talk about how, like, oh, this doesn't really make any sense. Because really, like, in the end, like, the world's back to normal. Right. Like the right amount of kids snapped and came back for Peter Parker's class. Like they did it in a way that I thought was it was very quick. It hit its point. It was a good laugh. It didn't drag on and they just moved on.
Dude, I was laughing out loud throughout this movie. And I think a lot of those laughs started with that one moment where they were doing the announcements with those two kids. I was cracking up throughout that entire scene.
What was the song they used for that montage?
It was Whitney Houston.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I that was funny. I like that a lot. They did it, you know, and it wasn't too, like, again, this whole Spider-Man, I won't call it a spinoff, I'll call it a shoot-off, right? Like a web, slinging a web. Oh, by the way, didn't he refer to his dick as a web slinger?
He did.
He did?
Yeah.
No, the old web shooter.
Yeah, the web shooter. That was kind of gross. but who are we to judge? But I thought it handled it like it wasn't too serious about it. You know, like you said, we're moving on. Like we're not going to think about the fact that we had a leftovers like situation and that many people are probably very mentally anguished over losing someone for 5 years and having them return in their life. And then there are probably people who got remarried and shit. How do you deal with that?
I like that drama too. And like, that's maybe one of the things I was talking about before is that there's a lot of different elements, a lot of shit going on in this movie. Like there's the trip, there's the B plot of their romance with Peter Parker. There's the actual issues with Mysterio. Then there's like Peter trying to deal with the drama of Tony Stark's death and like the world of getting fixed. There's a lot of stuff happening in this. I think it does it all very, very well. Like, all things considered, the amount of shit that it touches on, I think it does it extremely well. But maybe tackled just again, this is a personal thing, but I think it went on like maybe like 15 minutes too long, because I did hit that point where I just felt like this is a little bit too long. But again, it was a fucking fantastic movie. I was crying laughing like every 10 minutes. I feel like I got a good joke. JB Smoove, excellent addition to this cast.
Loved we sat next to somebody in our screening who I don't think has ever seen a Marvel movie. Not one laugh the entire movie. Yeah. Like, didn't get a rap. That was interesting. If you're not into a movie and you're sitting front row, I mean, you just got to get up and leave. I mean, that ain't worth it. That's not worth it. There were a couple things I did notice too on my extra screenings. The entire team is following Peter Parker around, like the whole movie. Like there's a scene where Peter Parker goes and buys the thing for MJ, and I'm like 90% sure you see Jake Gyllenhaal just in street clothes. You see Quentin Beck in street clothes following him. So, like, when you watch it again, if you see the movie again, like, you look around, you'll notice, like, a lot of his team is there. So just a lot of little details throughout, a lot of the hints on Talos and all that. I'm trying to think, is there anything else we missed? Happy Hogan, great to see Johnny Faz back. Love the scene of Spider-Man going through all the Stark tech.
Oh, so good. I was tearing up during that when he starts playing AC/DC.
Cues up the music a la the first Iron Man. Love that.
Shout out Marissa Tomei.
Yes, big shout out.
I'm okay with the presence of Iron Man in this movie. I would hope the next one does not have much or any Iron Man. Like, you can have a reference here or there, but that would be my only thing. Like, I'm fine with it now. And I know some people who don't like it at all now. The next one, if we have too much Iron Man, then like let's move on from Iron Man, which I imagine we will by the time the next one comes out. I'm not concerned about that. All right, one last thing, unless you guys can think of anything else, and that is the mid-credit scene where you get the reveal of Peter. First, you get the reveal of Peter Parker. Do you like that? Do you like that they reveal this character?
I think they had to do it. Well, what you're talking about to MJ specifically, because I think there was the reveal that, you know, Spider-Man or Peter Parker was Spider-Man to MJ, and then there's the big reveal to the rest of the world. And I liked how they did it to MJ. Like, I kind of wish they would have drawn it out a little more, but I think that would have been too much. I think you pretty much had to do it there, because like, you need to start developing that relationship in the next movies, like into an actual relationship, and like him being Spider-Man is pretty pivotal to being in a relationship with him. Cause that will cause tension. So I was fine with that. And then the big reveal, go ahead, you can describe to the audience.
Well, so they're going to have to play that off somehow. And I think in the comics, Doctor Strange helps out with that. So I would imagine that the Strange team up with Peter Parker will happen. Whether they erase it somehow or make people forget. I think Flash Thompson, who's younger in this, played by Joe Manganiello in the Tobey Maguire ones, he plays a version of Venom, I believe. I might be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. And he'll be a part of that too. He'll play into the fact because he loves Spider-Man but fucking hates Peter Parker. But yeah, the big reveal is that J.K. Simmons is back as J. Jonah Jameson. We don't know when he filmed it. He obviously was on our podcast, big time friend of the pod, J.K. Simmons. He did the J. Jonah Jameson thing for us before Endgame came out, I believe. I believe it was before Endgame came out. It was in like early to mid-April. He was at the end of the movie in a very Alex Jones type thing, which Joe and Kendra, you said that's like what it is in the video game. Spider-Man video game for Daily Bugle online.
Yeah, the video game is like a podcast guy, but he's a big conspiracy nut on Spider-Man's causing all these things to happen shit.
Yeah, so he is in the end of the movie, the mid-credits, as like an Alex Jones type thing, talking about how he got this video that Mysterio and Quentin Beck Mysterio was able to conjure up. He was able to manipulate things, make it sound like Peter Parker killed people and him. So he does the big reveal, but it is J.K. Simmons. Apparently in an interview, J.K. said that it was very late in the process. Or actually, John Watts, the director, said it was very late in the process. So I have been trying to figure out, and I asked the writer who interviewed him if he knew when it happened. I want to know if he filmed it before or after our podcast interview, because it's right in this spot where it's hard to tell. Because if we did it first, I want to brag about it. And I mentioned the last podcast, we still can't brag about this. And Monday, we're going to brag about it online, because I want to make sure we save the spoiler.
Big time. Man, that was the one thing where, like, that's everything's coming up LCB right now. We're getting where J.K. Simmons might have been inspired or gotten this role based off of us doing a last second script for him that we wrote. Like, I think I wrote that a half an hour before he came into the building. And like, you're just like, it would be kind of funny if you did this, right?
We almost didn't do it because you're always, they're not fucking puppets. They're not sideshows, actors and actresses. You don't want to be like, hey, do this, read this line. But he was great about it. And so you did it really close to it. I mean, I don't know. John Watts, I bet he's never even seen the old Spider-Mans. I bet he had no idea J.K. Simmons was even in it. I bet we inspired him.
But here's the thing, right? Is that that clip went super viral in comic book movie world. And like a lot of people picked it up. The clip and posted it everywhere.
I tagged John Watts.
I mean, yeah, dude, we did this. I'm claiming it, even though it might be patently untrue. I don't care. I'm just going to say it right now. LCB got this to happen. So if you want a J. Jonah Jameson back as Spider-Man, you have one person or one group to thank, and it is LCB.
I hope we interview him, and he's sitting right in front of us, and he tells us it wasn't us. Like, he did it in March, and we're like, yes, correct. All right, anyway, you're welcome.
You're a liar, but sure.
but it was cool. It was really cool to see him. It was the biggest audible gasp, maybe with the exception of the deaths in Avengers Infinity War. Even then, it was crazy. Our screening went absolutely fucking nuts over it. It was just shocking. It's a shocking reveal. There's no buildup for it. They say the Daily Bugle, and people are like, oh, yeah, nice, the Daily Bugle. And then you see him on screen, and people are like, holy fucking shit. Are you kidding me? It was cool to see that. Pretty cool to see. Anything else? Anything else that comes to your mind in this movie? I mean, I think it's a really good movie. You raised some good points. I'd like to hear some counterpoints and thoughts, and I'd like to maybe read some more about Quentin Beck's identity. And like I said, the only thing I can really allude to that is that they did talk about, when I say they, I mean the director, did talk about why Fury was a Skrull. Maybe that's how they tried to dupe him. But again, that whole part, that's an interesting thing to bring up. I still loved it regardless. I really didn't have any like glaring issues with it. Maybe tighten it up here and there. I don't know. But regardless, it's a top 10 MCU movie for me. 91 out of 100. Kenjack gave me 89. Trill a 90. Audience gave it a 92 out of 100. A blast. Lived up to the hype. And living up to the hype and being a good MCU movie, more than good. Like, people who I know didn't love Homecoming, love, like, everyone essentially I know who likes MCU movies love this. And for them to do that after Endgame, which, like, I mean, that is casting as big of a shadow as you can cast. Like, you really can't cast a bigger shadow in terms of a franchise. Or in this case, a cinematic universe. And they did a good job. So shout out to them. Shout out to Tom Holland. What a good fucking Spider-Man he is.
Tweet us. People who are more wise to the comic book lore and everything, just, like, tweet us and let us know with the whole Quentin Beck identity thing. And it's not that, like, I'm calling it a pothole or whatever, because it's not. Like, I just don't know the answer to it. And I want to know, because Skrulls, even if it's Skrull Nick Fury, like, Skrulls are supposed to be masters of espionage. I want to figure out. I want to know what happened. I need the director's cut of this movie and figure out every detail behind it.
They're also going to clearly reveal at some point other times in which Nick Fury was a Skrull.
Yeah.
They're going to go back and they're going to tell you when that happened too, which I imagine at least a couple times. All right, that's it, right? We good? We good on Spider-Man? Spider-Man Far From Home. Comic-Con is a week from this weekend. I imagine we are going to figure out what's next on the horizon, because right now it's an empty slate. I cannot wait to see Big Hat Man Kevin Feige put that fucking timeline up. It's going to be awesome.
Can't wait.
Hat God. Hat God himself. Hat God's on Crouton Gang.
He answered a question on Reddit Ask Me Anything about how many hats he said, and he said too many or like a lot. I need a better answer than that. Gonna need a full inventory.
Yeah, I'm wondering if he's like a hat rotator. I think we've had this conversation before. Maybe he is a three hat guy.
I would say a few hats. He's a few hat guy for sure. He has like a big rotating Lazy Susan of hats in his closet.
Didn't we make a joke that he probably throws the hats out after every red carpet?
I think we did. I think this is the fourth riff on his hats.
A blue wafer hat.
Well, we're going to be at D23 in August, and he's going to be there, and I really do hope we get to talk to him, because if we are on the carpet for it, the hat question is what we're going to ask. I'm going to ask him about the hats.
Gotta do it.
Maybe we should make a smaller hat to have him wear on top of his hat.
Give him an Eddie BC hat, like from Oz, like a really tiny one to put on the back.
One of those propeller hats?
Yes.
Yeah. Here's a hat for your hat. I think we might have to do that. Okay. Moving on. Top five worst comic book movie villains. Top five worst comic book movie villains. We'll start it off with Ken Jack, then myself, then Trill, and then the audience. Top five worst comic book movie villains. Go ahead, Ken Jack, start it out.
My number five, Galactus in Fast and Furious. Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. Just a big-ass cloud. I've seen Tommy Smoke's vape dinker and bigger clouds than that. And just a shitty cloud. It's supposed to be one of like the coolest villains in all of comic books, and they just made him a big-ass cloud. It sucks. I really just was, especially in retrospect, super disappointed by that.
I disagree. I disagree.
But you like those big-ass clouds?
I have no comment, but I disagree. But Galactus, your pick. That was Silver Surfer. I can't wait for those. I can't wait for Silver Surfer to be in the MCU. I really can't. I mean, it's a cool fucking character. Number five for me, Steppenwolf from Justice League. Justice League, a movie that has slowly gone down the rating scale for me the more I've seen it, the more I've watched it. There's a line. It was on HBO the other day. I never watch HBO movies. My friend was in town, and he likes watching movies on HBO, and he had it up. And it's when the Flash turns to that random family that they're putting on screen just to show you that they care about people after Batman and Superman – or Superman blew up all of Metropolis. And it's him – it's the Flash turning to, like, the family going, like Dostoevsky, and he, like, waves them and smiles, and he, like, runs away. And it's the most jarring, out-of-place joke in that entire movie. It's just that whole movie is very off-putting. I don't hate it as much as other DC movies. Like, I still have it probably higher than most. I have like high 60s now. I enjoy a good amount of it, but man, it's a mess. The tonal shifts in that movie are just off-putting. And Steppenwolf's the worst part. Steppenwolf's hands down the worst part of that movie. Dumb character. Looks terrible. Trash. Never acted on set with any of the actors, too. Was never on set with any of the Justice League characters. That's a problem. That's probably Thanos is so good because he's personable and he looks like he's with the actual fucking characters. Steppenwolf was so out of place. That's my number five. Trill, you're number five.
Number five. Okay, so some of these have overlap with we did the top five worst comic book movie costumes. Some of them don't. Number five, it just for ridiculousness, is the Paul Giamatti Rhino.
Yeah.
Now he would be higher up on the list if he was an actual villain, but this was a this was kind of a teaser villain from Amazing Spider-Man 2. And he just didn't he have a barbed wire tattoo?
Yeah,
big mobster. Not really buying Paul Giamatti. I think Paul Giamatti would be great. Maybe not as a Rhino character. I don't even think I like the Rhino character. Paul Giamatti was not playing him. I have a lot of respect for Paul Giamatti. I put him up there on the Stanley Tucci level of actors I admire, but this one just didn't work, especially with the big Domium 3 barbed wire tattoo on his cranial,
fucking right around the fucking forehead. Oh my god! And then he's in that rhino suit, which looks like a fucking like a Power Rangers thing. Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad.
Just missing my list. Maybe not. I didn't put him on this because I thought the movie was shit to begin with. But actually, what you guys might have him. But it was another character with a scar or a tattoo on his forehead from a comic.
Might be.
Do you have him? Okay, we'll wait.
Maybe not.
We'll wait on it.
Yeah, I don't, but I know who you're talking about.
Okay. It's Bullseye from Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. That stinks. Not good.
Just don't put anything. If you're bald, that's being bald's enough of a distinguishing feature for a villain. You don't have to tattoo or mark him up.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's very jarring to look at. Like, it makes it more noticeable. Like when I'm looking at Paul Giamatti Ryan, I'm looking at the fucking barbed wire. Oh, terrible character. It's just an awful adaption of the combo character. Audience number five, not on my list, but pretty good one. And it doesn't get enough disrespect. And that's Tommy Lee Jones, Two-Face.
That's mine too.
That's a shit character. A bad character, and I'll get more into it in a minute. Ken Jack, number four for you, worst comic movie villain.
That's my number four, Tommy Lee Jones, Two-Face. Just it sucks. We know for a fact, like, not even no supposition here, like, he didn't want to be there. He hated Jim Carrey, called him like a buffoon, or I cannot sanction your buffoonery any longer, he said to him on set. You can tell throughout the entire thing, right? Like, you could tell just based on his performance, he really just at one point decided he doesn't want to do this role anymore, and he didn't put any effort into it, and he looked like shit. looked like absolute dog shit. He looked like a villain in Yu Yu Hakusho. It's an eclectic reference. I apologize. But it is just not as bad, bad performance.
Yeah, the Two-Face character's tough. That's just a such an outlandish premise to begin with. I thought they did it very well in Dark Knight, but other than that,
it's only because he was in like the closing 20 minutes of the movie.
Well, yeah, but he wasn't like he also wasn't really like Tommy Lee Jones was like straight in, and it was almost like a Batman animated series film adaptation of like what that character would be like, and it's just comical, like the way like his two personalities are split. Like at least the Dark Knight was more so like he just became like bad after that point.
Yeah, but even then they try to make him. I still think the funniest scene in the Dark Knight is that one that they always tweet where like he didn't realize it was the Joker until he took off the tiny surgical mask.
It's the other thing too with the Two-Face character, just in general, like he has. Drew Barrymore is one of his sidekicks, and it's like,
I forget who.
Yeah, he has like the good side and the bad side of his lair. It's just so fucking ridiculous. And again, I know what Joe Schumacher's going for. It's just so fucking dumb. It just like back then, and even the Ang Lee Hulk did it. Like they're trying to really make a comic book movie on screen, and they tried to do it with the colors, and it just, oh man, it didn't work.
Trying to shape the movie. The comic book instead of shaping the comic book to the movie, which is what I think Marvel does a little bit more.
Tim Burton. I always hated those titles, like Batman Forever. That sounds like a tattoo that someone would get when they're on drugs or something.
Love Batman Forever.
Or something some kid would write in the yearbook. the full Tommy Lee Jones, here it is, he said. The maitre d' said, I hear you're working with Tommy Lee Jones. He's over in the corner having dinner. So Jim Carrey went over and said, hey, Tommy, how are you doing? And the blood just drained from his face, Carrey said. And he got up shaking, and he must have been in mid-Kill Me Fantasy or something like that. And he went to hug me and said, I hate you. I really don't like you. And I said, what's the problem? And pulled up a chair, which probably wasn't smart. And he said, I cannot sanction your buffoonery.
What an absurd thing to say to another human being in the year 1993 or whatever. I cannot sanction your buffoonery.
I mean, we've read that quote many times. I don't think it's the first time I actually read it in full. It makes me laugh every time. And related to that, my number four is the Riddler. Both those characters, I thought the Riddler was a more egregiously terrible character, but the Riddler and Two-Face, they were both trying to play the Joker. And that's the problem in a lot of these DC and some Marvel movies as well, where it's like a quote-unquote twisted character. They're trying to play the Joker, and they shouldn't be, because that's not what their characters are. You're the Riddler, you're the Two-Face, you're two very different characters from the Joker, and they were both trying to play the Joker. And you even saw that in the end when the Riddler is all wet and his fucking makeup's and shit's coming off, and he looks like what's we've said Matthew Lesko, the question mark guy, or like the money guy. He just looks ridiculous, and he's trying to seem all like crazy and fucked up, and just like, man, this is not. Like, you're not the Joker. You're the Riddler. You're a different character. Like, it just is an annoying character. It's a terrible adaption. Awful. Awful, awful adaption. Joel Schumacher, Garbo movies are terrible. Terrible. Cheryl, number four.
Number four, I'm sticking with Spider-Man 2. This was a really shit movie. Electro. I hated Electro. Amazing Spider-Man 2. It's way, way different. Waste of Jamie Foxx. The villain's motivations were some of the weakest I think you ever had from a villain. I think it was pretty much just the fact that nobody noticed him before he was Electro, and nobody noticed me before I put on the mask. And now he got these powers, and now he just wants to do bad. Then I think people forget that like he didn't even really get his powers in a cool way. He just got electrocuted by eels in a vat of experimental eels. And I'm remembering this right? Like he's got dropped in some like what wasn't it?
I don't remember if it was eels, but it was a vat of something electric.
Yeah, it was some electric vat, and then he comes out and just tears it up. And like I put it on the worst costumes because I thought the general character design was a little ridiculous. So 5 and 4 from the same movie for me, not good. I'm glad they redid it with competent people making the movie. I do hope Jamie Foxx gets to come back to do something.
He looked like a ripoff Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah,
gotta at least give him a big dick. Gotta give him a big dick. do that.
Well, we talked about in the costume thing, like some of the most terrifying things were the Halloween masks.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, just I don't know, man. Big swing and a miss.
Doesn't move both of
them. Give me Lightning Mask Electro, like from the comics.
With the boys. Give me the boys.
Give me the Quickler or whatever that Flash villain's name is.
The Trickster.
What were the other ones? Because there was other ones too, right? That were just
some good ones. There's some good ones. I might be on a list one day.
You will respect Crouton Gang.
Audience number four, Bane, also from the Joel Schumacher Batmans. This is the dumb Bane. What wrestler played him?
Cicada. I forgot. I don't remember from what wrestler it was. I didn't think it was a wrestler. I thought it was a bodybuilder.
Maybe it was. Batman and Robin, whatever. It's a small murderer convict who they pump a bunch of serum into him, and he becomes this big dumb guy who at one point wears a fedora and drives a car. He's dumb, can't speak. You can drive a car and wear a fedora pretty well, though.
Yeah, so can Red Reddington. We love him.
That's true. We do. Actually, we love our Red.
He drives, to be fair.
We do love our Red. Jeep Swenson, American professional wrestler, stuntman, and actor.
What's
Robert Swenson.
Yeah. Oh, rest in peace. Big rest in peace.
Yeah, big time rest in peace. He died like right when that movie came out. All right, moving on. Number three, Ken Jack, worst comic book movie villain.
My number three is Malekith from Thor 2. This is another one where we know in retrospect that the actor didn't want to be part of it. I think it was Chris Eccleston, I want to say, right?
He hated it.
Despised it. They told him going to the movie he wouldn't have to do a lot of prosthetics, and he had to sit in a chair for like 6 hours every day regardless. And he hated it. You could tell he hated it. Character stunk. Just a fucking elf. Like, sorry, that sucks. Leave the elves to Lord of the Rings, Marvel. Do your own shit. I mean, there's just so many other avenues they could have gone, and I hated every one of the Dark Elves characters. They were so uninteresting to me. And the chief among that is Malekith. They shouldn't have even had them speak a different language. Like, everyone else is speaking English. Just have them speak English. Don't make them do that stupid subtitle shit. Oh, that was frustrating. But yeah,
We're fans. We don't say Marvel has a lot of sidesteps, but they do. They have a fair amount of sidesteps, especially in Thor and Malekith. Oh my God, he's terrible. And I like Chris Eccleston. I think he's a good character in Leftovers. But man, he hated it. He hated the role. You could tell he hated the role. Bad character. That's a good pick. My number three is a combo, and that is the Mandarin, a.k.a. Trevor, and Aldrich Killian, speaking of the MCU, from Iron Man 3, which is an abomination of a movie, in my opinion. I absolutely hate that movie.
$5 billion that movie made. It's absurd.
It is crazy. That movie is – that bait and switch is offensive as an audience goer. Like, that actually was irritating. And I'm not even a Marvel, I wasn't even a big Marvel comics guy at that point. I can't say I'm still not, I don't read, but like knowing the lore and knowing the characters and like kind of reading about them. Aldrich Killian, I don't love that character, whatever. Guy Pierce, it was just when he has that reveal, like, oh, I'm Trevor, like he's like a fucking a Beatles wannabe. And the Mandarin. There was such a cool Mandarin, is such a cool and beloved character. They fucking retconned it. They retconned it that there is an actual Mandarin somewhere, and it's not just this fake guy named Trevor. Ben Kingsley, another wasted opportunity. But yeah, the combo of Aldrich Killian and the Mandarin was terrible, awful stuff from the MCU. And one of their last few really big sidesteps with a villain. Like, they've had some weaker villains, but that one was like people were pissed, and I think Kevin Feige has reined that in to me, like, all right, I'm not gonna do that shit anymore. So yeah, that's my number three. Trill number three.
I gotta put Mr. Freeze on the list. He's bad. Bad one-liners, just in a bad movie. I think I found him more problematic than Two-Face.
You hated him more than Two-Face. Okay.
Yeah, because it is like they just decided to do it again. It's like, yeah, you know what? What didn't work so well in Batman Forever? We're just going to do it again in Batman and Robin, and we're going to dial it up to 10. And at least he wasn't playing the Joker, but, just chill. Like, all that shit. And just ridiculous look. Like, it's just stupid, man. And then that led into the goons being on the ice skates and all that shit. Just the concept. Like, I had nothing against like a Mr. Freeze as a concept of a character, because I thought he was done incredibly well in the animated series. The Arnold's take on him was just abysmal.
The thing is, too, is that like they got elements of the character I thought right. Like some of it was done right. I amazingly enough, the elements where he's in a bathrobe, where you look at him like without all that dumb armor on, and you're like, oh, this could look good. Because like he has armor, obviously, the character, but like it's much more subdued armor. It's not that nonsense crystallized shit that he's wearing. That's a brutal character. Memorable, though. Very memorable. I mean, I would say top five most memorable comic movie characters just because of the one-liners.
Yeah.
Or villain, that is, at least.
That's true. But bad villain.
Bad. I'll never forget the Batman Sub-Zero trailers that used to play before movies back in the 90s. 1997, Kevin Conroy. Shout out. Good Batman. Audience number three picked the Ryan Reynolds Deadpool from X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I expected.
It's not on my list, but it is terrible. So, Kenjack, number two.
My number two, worst villain. I'm going to go Oscar Isaac Apocalypse. Just in the words of that guy from Tim Robbins show, stinky. Because it was really stinky, and I hated it from start to finish. And I've said a lot about Oscar Isaac. I do enjoy him a lot about the a lot as an actor. But part of the one thing I don't think he's particularly strong in is that he doesn't really act with his eyes too well. And the only thing in that entire costume he would be able to move is his eyes. And so it was basically a zero sum for him to be able to display anything about him that's makes him excel as an actor. The makeup and the suit and everything just – it sucked. It sucked real bad.
Shout out to you for confusing Tim Robinson for Tim Robbins, though.
That's the British guy, right? Shit.
No.
Wait, who's that?
Tim Robbins is from West Covina, California.
Oh, that is.
I like how you have that like ready to go.
I always say Tim Robinson.
Because one time I remember looking up West Covina after watching Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I'm like, is this a real place? And I looked at people from West Covina and I'm like, oh, okay.
You very much know who Tim Robbins is. You know who Tim Robbins is. I'm not going to give it up. You know. Tim
Robbins. Oh, wait. Never mind. Yeah. I was thinking
Shawshank Redemption. Excuse me.
I was thinking of the British politician or British right wing nut job guy. Maybe Tommy Robinson?
Yeah, maybe. Apocalypse sucks. He's like Steppenwolf, except I think I expected more out of him. I'm just going to kill everybody. Okay.
It's Fox's inability. Fox's inability to nail big time villains, and that's why Thanos worked well. And I'll roll into mine here in a second. It's similar because you built Thanos up. You built up the lore of who they are. You could introduce a big bad and make the big bad work if you build up the big bad is worth caring about. Like you have to care about someone that big. That is that like world shifting, and just brought Apocalypse in. Like he put sand through people's necks and murdered a couple people in a town square, basically, and that's about it. Like that was it. Like he did nothing else to really made you sell on him to understand that he's worthy of you caring about this menacing presence. Like the strongest
supposed to be like the bad guy, right? Like him and Dark Phoenix supposed to be like tit for tat almost, and like they just no build up. Here he is. He's from ancient Egypt. Remember that place? No? Okay.
He can do Sandmer. And why doesn't he kill all the other X-Men with sand? Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, you got to make leaps of
that's
belief.
That's what I would have done.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that's how you kill the X-Men.
He murdered people with sand. He could have just, they were fighting on sand. Lift it up, kill all of them. I don't know.
Hello, everybody. I am Gambit. He just gets immediately drowned in sand.
Speaking of Fox and ruining really big villains, and I hope we see Dr. Doom very soon in the MCU, and I think we will. I think we're going to get a Fantastic Four tease at Comic-Con or at a D20 thing. I really do. Victor Von Doom, a.k.a. Dr. Doom, a.k.a. originally supposed to be called Victor Domashev. Toby Kebbell until the studio was like, what the fuck? No.
And Dr. Dome.
Dr. Dome. I will give you the gluck gluck.
Josh Trank wanted to do a non-comic book Victor Von Doom, and they changed it, and then it ended up being this like molten metal face guy who looks at you, who you can't tell is looking at you because none of his facial features can move, and then your heads explode. It was
his eyes were so close together, like one of those cats.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tome. Please cough.
He fucking sucked. That movie is absolute trash. I'd go back and listen to us talk about it. Matthew Vaughn, excuse me, sorry. Name slipped. Almost said Simon Kinberg. We have not interviewed Simon Kinberg. With Matthew Vaughn, who talked about a movie being a turd and how he told them, get rid of this movie, and they said no, and they just made it really shitty. Even shittier than it was. But yeah, Victor Von Doom, amazing character. Dr. Doom rules, and they just shit the bed with it. Just a guy who you can't see his face move. Or do anything.
Yeah, that's my number two as well. So
okay,
I won't go into it, but like, especially since I've read up on some of what he's like in the comics, and he's a really complex character, a really cool villain, and they've just like they fucked everything else up in those Fantastic Four movies. They fucked him up. Just and nothing there. Nothing there.
And no hands sometimes.
That movie has a big time 4 out of 100 for me. That movie fucking sucked.
I didn't spend 8 years in dome school for you.
Jeez, I want to write this one.
I really hope Dr. Doom and Norman Osborn are the main villains in the next phase of the MCU.
Dome University.
Yeah, with the DU.
Audience number two, Electro. They agree with you, Trill. They think Electro fucking stinks.
I agree with him. Them.
There's
one guy.
You reveal that our audience vote is always one guy.
It's Jeff's dad. It's Larry Lowe.
Number one, worst comic book movie villain, Ken Jack. Who do you got at number one?
I'm thinking about Dr. Dome. I'm going to go with Topher Grace Venom. I'm sure he's somebody else's as well, so I'll just say hold off until we say
it. Not mine.
Not mine either.
Go ahead. Go off, King.
All right. Yeah, no, he just stunk. I mean, I don't know who in the right mind thought that Eric from that 70s show was a good choice to play a villain in a major tentpole franchise, but they should probably be fired. Sam Raimi, big fan of his work for the most part. So that was really stupid. Really, really stupid. And he didn't work at all. He didn't have the charisma to pull off the role of Eddie Brock. And like you see it now with Venom, right? Like what's his name? Tom Hardy has that like it factor where like you get it. Like he's the bad boy. And like Eric from that 70s show, that's all everybody knew him as. That and the guy in the beginning of Ocean's 11 that says all reds. Like that's nobody else knows him as anything else. And you try and make him into the swaggering bad guy, just didn't work at all. And his costume looked like dog shit. Didn't like that either.
The Venom is not like I think the Venom look is not awful in that movie, but the combo just doesn't work. It never worked. It was shoehorned in. It's around that era of bad casting. Spider-Man 3 was fucking brutal. I don't love the Raimi Spider-Man as much as other people do, but Spider-Man 3, I think, is universally pretty brutal. And that's the classic example of too many villains. Venom was wholly unnecessary in that movie. Sandman is a great character. Could have just been the only villain. As they continued the quest to figure out which human killed Peter Parker's uncle. Because always changed.
Died too much film. Got sucked off to death.
By who?
By
Dr. Tom.
Yeah, say that.
Bruce Buffer is there announcing it.
Why is Bruce Buffer there? Oh, is he in the cage?
He was in the wrestling scene.
The wrestling cage?
Yeah, wasn't Uncle Ben waiting for him while he was wrestling?
I thought that was after. Oh, maybe not.
I don't know. It was around the same time frame.
I think I'm gonna lower Dumbo 5 points because do you remember Bruce Buffer was in there and Dumbo said, yeah. Let's get ready to Dumbo.
Let's get ready to Dumbo.
How come we didn't talk about that in our review?
We may have briefly, but if we didn't, shame on us. That was tough. That was big eye roll. Almost wanted to get up and leave. My number one, Ken Jack. When I said earlier I disagreed with you on Galactus, it's because it should be number one. It's a fucking cloud. It's a cloud. That's it.
Strange cloud. Kid Cody classic.
It's a fucking – they took a character who's a guy. He's huge. He's like planet size. And I don't know a ton about Galactus, but I know enough that he's not a fucking cloud. And that's that. It's like all I got for you there. It's a cloud. It looks like a big worm cloud. Terrible. Just again, Fox, very happy you guys sold off your properties because insane misunderstanding of the characters you had. And I hope they do Galactus, and I'm sure we won't get Galactus for years. Probably 10 plus years we won't get Galactus until at least the X-Men are well established. But I mean, Rise of Silver Surfer, unbelievably terrible. Trill, number one for you.
You know, for me, Doomsday should have been an arc. Like, Doomsday should have been a Thanos-like arc. Now, I don't think you could do anything interesting with, like, even approaching that. But, like, it should have been a looming threat across four movies before you even got Doomsday.
They killed like, someone in the first team-up movie. It's kind of bullshit.
Yeah. So I just have bad memories from everything in that movie. I shout out to Jesse Eisenberg, friend of the pod.
Number one for the audience, Steppenwolf. Villains voted for. I'm going to read all of them off. Apocalypse. Ares from Wonder Woman, excuse me. Terrible. That's just Lupin. It's a Lupin from Harry Potter. Bane, Deadpool, Doctor Doom, Electro, Enchantress, Galactus, Hector Hammond, Incubus, who I believe is from Suicide Squad, Malekith, Mr. Freeze, Lex Luthor, Steppenwolf, the Mandarin, Two-Face, Ultron. Ultron, bad villain. Shout out to Red Reddington, though. Venom and Zemo. Zemo is like just ho-hum, whatever. He was like not even the real villain of Civil War. He's just like a He's a MacGuffin plot device.
Yeah, that was big. I still have so many issues with the Civil War plot, but that's for another pod.
Yeah, Civil War is – I like Civil War a lot, but I do have issues with Civil War a little more than I think most people do. But I still love Civil War. It's still a fun movie, though. But it's lowered down my rankings as time has gone on. Okay, those are our lists. Anything else?
Rest in peace, Rip Torn. Big rest in peace.
Yeah, obviously a legend. I've read many stories about Rip Torn. He's a lot more fascinating than I think most people know. So just and a lot of people know how fascinating he is. But comedic legend in general.
Read up on the life and times of Rip Torn because you just nailed it. Because there's a lot of stuff I didn't know about him until after he'd passed when I read in his obituary articles.
Yep. Texas guy, Jeff.
Was Texas guy.
Great voice. Forever a great voice.
Apparently, Rip Torn was Burt Reynolds' roommate. Really? I didn't know that for also, a bit. Yeah.
Sissy SpaceX cousin.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Just fascinating.
All right. Next week in the pod, we're going to be reviewing Stuber and Crawl and maybe Midsummer. We have to get Trill away to see it. He's traveling and such, and it's not wide everywhere. There's a couple theaters in New York which have dropped it completely, which is really unfortunate. Yeah, we're trying to get him screen or something. So if we do that, we'll bump the two reviews, and we'll do a quarter trail probably for Stuber, which is apparently not very good. Apparently Stuber, not good. But we'll review what we can, but we will review Midsummer at some point. Ken, Jack, and I put a written review up online for it. Anything else?
No, good pod.
Fun pod.
That's it.
Yep. All right. Well, we'll move on. For Ken, Jack, Trill, I'm Jeff Lowe. We will talk to you on Sunday.
Have a good week at the box office.